You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another really exciting episode of Ask Drone You as we are here in New York City. We are actually with the FDNY, two firefighters, also drone pilots. We've got John Walkie over here and we've got Mike Wall, and they are really leading the charge when it comes to UAS and public safety. What operations are they using drones for? What operations has worked and what hasn't? What lessons can they tell us that might end up saving your department? As more and more departments go through utilizing drone operations, there's a lot of hard lessons, and I believe that you can avoid those lessons by listening to this show. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with me. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks. Thank you.
So, let me ask you, first things first, how are you using drones? What operations are you guys using drones for?
So, we respond in all five boroughs in New York City. Responding to second alarms and greater, unusual incidents, large-scale emergencies, any event needed by PD or our...
Any way we can.
Yeah.
Well, so we try to get out as often as possible and for different situations to see where it really is useful and where it isn't.
Where would you say are the top two most useful operations that you've found drones useful for?
Fire and collapse would be my opinion. What's yours, Mike?
Yeah, large-scale fires for scene safety.
So help us understand what that looks like. If I'm looking at a large-scale fire, you guys are responding to it. Are you using drones to kind of fly above the building to look for hotspot areas to avoid sending other public safety officers? Or what exactly, what information are you garnishing that's helping your operations be more efficient?
So when our department arrives on scene at an incident, at a fire, the incident commander, the person in charge of that fire, sets up a command post in the front of the building. So he has a view of just what's in front of him, the exposure one. When we arrive on scene, we'll set up our drone. We'll get a rear exposure and an aerial shot of the roof or any other elements needed. On top of that, it's thermal and visual spectrum. So they get IR and visual of what they're looking at. That information is sent to a tablet at the incident command post, and they get a live view of everything going on.
You know, you brought up a really unique point about that there's a tablet that's being viewed by command. Are you guys using any particular software or any particular applications that are allowing command posts outside of that particular operation having an ability to view what the drone is viewing from, let's say, a remote location?
Yeah, it gets streamed back to FDOC as well. So we send it to a secure server, and then it's dissipated from there. So the tablet is connected to that server as well, and then they could also view it down at headquarters, and then they could send out an email list to specific chiefs, and those chiefs could actually see the incident, or, you know, unfolding from anywhere in the world, basically. But if they're responding in, or they would be able to view it on their tablet, on their phone, or whatever, to update them en route.
So you're using the Mavic's ability to live stream through the RTMP or the specific channel that's encrypted, correct?
Correct.
That's awesome. I love that you're using that instead of some other third-party application, because I think that helps lock down the data. So when it comes to fires and getting that view, you mentioned thermal, you mentioned EO. What type of drone have you guys found to be the most useful? It's easily deployed, you're able to get out on scene quickly with it, it's dependable, it's reliable, and it works in cold weather and hot weather.
We were originally using the Phantom 4. Now our workhorse seems to be the dual.
The
M2E dual.
The Mavic 2 Enterprise dual?
Yeah. Right.
It's
quick, it's easy setup. The sensors on the IR are even though they're small, they're large enough to create an impact for what we need.
That's awesome. What would you say is one of the biggest lessons that you've learned about equipment or your operations as a whole related to equipment?
It's got to be mobile. It's got to be something that we can take with us and move it. If we set up in one location, there's a good chance that we have more units coming to this location. We got to make room for them to do what they have to do. And by going to the smaller equipment, it's easier for us to move out of the way and kind of set up somewhere else, because you're only taking basically a case this big. So we could pack that away and go to a different, you know, location and set up over here. So it's the portability, the practicality of it, rather than dragging 100 cases. And there's so much more stuff involved in the bigger, like the tethered units and stuff like that, that we could get out of the Mavic 2 Enterprise.
Were you using, like, I mean, well, I know you said you're using the Phantom before, but were you using other units that you found that just were not portable, and that's why you moved to the Mavic 2 Enterprise Dual?
So our initial foot in the door with the FAA was to go with a tethered system. We went with a tether that was 0 to 200 feet AGL. We were given that clearance. Now we're untethered. We still think there's a need for tethering. You need a workhorse that's gonna go up in an extended operation in a fixed location and stay there for an extended period of time without change outs or anything else. You could do hot swaps and everything when you're operating free flight, but to put a drone up and keep it up there for 7 hours, which was the last time I've flown in lower Manhattan, it was 7 hours that we had it up for.
Wow.
You're not gonna get that in any other application.
So let me ask you this question. You said you were with tethered and you're now not tethered. Is there a reason for that? Was there this ideological perspective that tethering drones was safer?
I think by FAA standards, it was.
Even by some of our standards as well. It has the perception of being safer. They appear to be more like a kite than an actual piece of equipment.
And do you feel like that's an accurate perception?
No, not at all.
Why?
Not at all.
GPS multipath, magnetic interference, those are all things that you can't control. And when you set up one of these operations with these tethered systems, if it's not going to work here, it's not like you could just pick it up and move it. Everything has to be shut off, broken down, moved to another location, set back up, and then tested at that location.
So there's a breakdown and build up that's time consuming. On top of that, I think departments have to have faith in their pilots. And when you're dealing with a tethered system, you're limited to what a pilot can do. And if there is an issue, you're limited in how fast you can resolve that issue.
Mm. Yeah, that can be problemsome or troublesome, to say the least. It actually, you brought up a point that I wanted to touch on really quick, which is that multipath GPS interference, right? You guys are flying in super urban environments. You have extremely tall buildings with a lot of bouncing GPS signals. I mean, I think people can understand just how difficult it is to use your own navigation on your phone, because your phone doesn't know where it is because the signals are bouncing all over as well. One of the questions I have for you is, I know the Mavic 2 Enterprise Dual does not have attitude mode. Is that something that you guys would find useful in order to avoid those multipath interference issues and other issues as a whole?
Yeah, it would be helpful to be able to switch it and know that I could bring it back. To be honest with you, I have not had any issues with the Mavic at all. On either end, whether the video feed or the control feed. So until that situation arises, I really can't speculate how it would react.
Gotcha.
But attitude mode is always, you know, a benefit in every drone that I fly.
I agree with you. I think it's imperative for safety, because if you have a GPS issue and you're having a flyaway, the only way to stop it is putting it in attitude mode. So I think this is something that everyone needs to know. Let's talk really quick. What do you think is one of the biggest, most intense hard lessons that you have learned as a department that you think is extremely important for other departments to know as well? I mean, we just kind of touched on the fact that tethered drones do have particular operations that they work for, like persistent surveillance and whatnot, crowd monitoring, but what other problems did you guys have to work through to get where you are today?
I think it's just changing the perception of drones in general and the perception of the firefighter. We're a department that our operating procedure is from our birth of the department. It goes back to like Ben Franklin. it really does. You know, go in fast, get there, get it wet, get in close. You know, that's what we do. And to get a department to change that mentality and say there's something that can be augmented. You know, we don't need water. We don't need a hook. We want an eye in the sky to help you guys out. There's a big brother mentality that gets attached to that, where people don't like other people looking at what they're doing. And it's not anything about that. It's to augment what the department is doing and to aid in something that can be prevented, whether it's a line of duty death, loss of a structure. We're just here to make sure things go right.
Yeah.
Right?
Give the information to the people that need it.
Is that why you guys made your Mavic 2 Enterprise Dual red with the skin and whatnot? Was that to essentially try to, control expectations of who's flying around?
Well, you got to rock the brand a little bit too.
Yes. More so when we're on scene, there's so many different people that are there. You have
the
fire department, you have the police department, you have OEM, you have Red Cross, we have... And it just keeps coming. The bigger it gets, the more people show up. So at least that makes it so that they can look up and see who is that in the sky. And you can't miss it. It's bright red, yellow stripes, and says FDNY on it. They know exactly who it belongs to. And it just relieves a little bit of the tension on who this could be. If it was just another DJI in the sky, it would just lead to problems. Eventually somebody's going to say, oh, he was just this, and... By the time you would track down who the pilot would be to confirm that it is at one of ours, it would be a problem already at that point.
No, I think it's an important thing to discuss. I think another really important thing to discuss is standards for operation. This is why we are here today, is to essentially aid in the development of standards going out across the country. And we're really excited to be working with you on that. But explain to everyone what is behind us right now with the NHTSA training program. I mean, this is meant to essentially create standards for training your guys, but help us understand why are standards so important and how does this course address some of those problems?
This course allows pilots and departments to have a standard on where they fit into around the nation or essentially around the world. Standardized course, so it's always structured the same. So you have no deviation in the actual plans, and it's flown in the same pattern, straight overhead, and then you do left-hand or right-hand circles around, reading the letters in the buckets as you go around, come back, land, and then your time's on that event. That allows you to see, one, how your pilots operate, two, it gives you a time frame on how long it takes to complete this course. From there, you could be put into, what we need to work on. Do we need to work on, depth of perception? Do we need to work on control issues? Do we need to work on, orientation? And it allows all those, factors to be seen with just one simple evolution, rather than try to go through multiple different obstacles and then try to, every department would have their own course and their own set of obstacles. This just kind of sets the standard for that. And it makes it a lot easier for everybody to be on the same page when it comes to how to not train your members, but to see where your members need more work, less work, what you can focus on, and come up to a standard of where everybody should be and do it safely.
And there's no reason why you can't layer on top of it.
Yeah.
So
because this is just one piece of a larger training
standard. But if you're a department that is constantly responding to water emergencies or high rise structures, or you can augment that and add a layer on top of that. That will be a primary focus for your department. So
no, I love it.
I think options.
I think it's fantastic. It also goes to show that this department is really taking a lot of steps to ensure that they're setting up their program properly. But we know on the enterprise side that it's very difficult to create systematic and scalable operations that everyone can follow. And I think you guys brought up a really good point in kind of pre-show, which is every guy who has been here on this drone team has been here from the beginning. They all have an extreme passion for what they're doing. How important is that for the development of the program?
I think when anything scales up, you'll run into issues with it. When there's an initial startup, you have a group of people that are like-minded and they want to make it work, and they'll do anything to make it work. So for a department like us to get into a program like this on the ground floor, everybody's trying to push it.
Yeah.
Right. We're trying to make it work. We want to make it work. Once it scales up, then you run into your staffing issues. You run into your standard department issues that any department's going to run into. But ground floor inception, you got guys that are willing to do the job and want to do the job. Not saying that when it gets bigger, that's not the case. But we're in a good spot right now where everybody has their go-to, whether it's mapping, or just flight time in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all here for a set reason, and we're sticking
and
to it.
Also, to piggyback on that as well, by having people that are passionate about, you know, drones in general, it allows them to do research on their own. So they'll look and they'll see what's coming out. Like ADS-B is one of the new topics that are coming out, and they'll keep their eye on that and see, well, how can we integrate that piece of technology with what we're doing now? Or the new camera would come out, well, how could we utilize that for this? Or, you know, DJI put an FPV system out recently. Well, how can we use that technology to aid what we're doing now? And by having that passion where you're doing this research, it's not even research, but you're doing it on your own time, you know, reviewing laws and changes and staying proactive in, you know, the UAS community, it just all transfers over into your program, and it kind of just makes it a little bit more seamless instead of trying to find somebody to adapt that technology. Somebody's already looking at that way and on how to implement it and how to make it all work together.
And when you're in a ground floor in any tech, you're going to run into issues. The nice thing about it is when you get a group of guys that are starting, whether it's in this city or across the country, it becomes a tight-knit community, and you make contacts with a lot of people that, with an established program or with something else that's been out there for a long time, it's so scaled up that you lose any ability to make a push for something new. So since this tech is so new, I think you end up meeting people that 10 years from now you wouldn't normally be able to talk to without going through hoops and everything else, since everybody's on that line of let's make this work.
It sounds like people are more on the line of let's make this work, and we realize it's not nearly as dangerous as we thought it was, right? I mean, the program's already evolved, and it feels like it's continuing to evolve as well.
Yeah, the safety and the reliability of drones in general is, I mean, they're safe. I mean, for the most part, besides, you know, little issues that you would have that a pilot should be responsible for, you know, magnetic interference, GPS multipath, by being aware of that situation and that it could happen and know how to correct those situations or possibly avoid them. Situational awareness of the pilot themselves only amplifies how safe and reliable they are.
Well, if you were to recommend a department is getting into drones, what would you recommend that they do first and most importantly?
Research what you need it for. You don't want to go buy a drone that you're not going to be able to use or is too powerful for what your needs are. If your needs are video, then maybe you should look towards the video aspect. If you need it for hazmat monitoring, then you need to look for something that's capable of holding meters.
Unfortunately, there's not one drone in this tech that is good for everything.
So what would a drone look like that was good for everything? Perfect drone.
I don't think it exists yet. So.
But if you could build it, if you can ask right now, because there are people listening who may or may not have the ability to give you what you want, what does the perfect drone look like?
I think there are drones out there now that are very close. To get an all-weather drone with an extended flight time, I think would be key for any department.
Yeah, and small. Something
a small footprint.
Small footprint is always a plus, especially in a big city that's tight. You know, sometimes we go down a block and we have, you know, 25 feet here, 25 feet here. And even though it sounds, 50 foot, that's easy. It's not easy when you have, you know, radio transmissions and lights and blinking and units coming in, people all over the place, and everybody's doing their job and you're trying to do your job as safely as possible. But you're also looking out for everybody that's around you because they're really not aware of what you're doing.
Yeah.
So,
do you guys always use a VO? Is that one of the things that your department does?
Yes.
What other types of nuanced operational protocols do you guys follow, like always using a VO, that maybe traditional operators don't always do?
Well, we always file our notifications.
The NOTAMs?
Yeah, we have to make NOTAMs. That's as per our COA, so we'll make all those notifications as well. For us, we have to stay on top of the TFRs in the area.
Which is unbelievably... There's three since we've been here.
The president moving about. There's always a permanent TFR, Trump Tower in the city. And then you have baseball games from Yankee Stadium, Citi Field. And then we have the U.S. Open and, you know, other things such as the marathon. And so we are constantly, and it's not just the president, we have the UN as well. So you have dignitaries always coming in and out. So we have to pretty much stay on top of those TFRs, because if we have to make these notifications to operate, we have to do them fairly quickly. And it's not like we have, you know, a day or two to say, hey, we're going to be here at this time. There's going to be a second alarm. We're getting that report of a second alarm. We're doing this kind of in route. So for us, it's not like we can look at a map and say, oh, we're going to be operating here today. So everything that we do is kind of on the fly, which that's
the nature of the beast.
Yeah. The nature of the beast. But it does complicate things extremely, just based on sometimes we don't know where we're going to be setting up.
Yeah.
We'll have to get there and figure it out. And at nighttime, now we have night operations, always using a strobe, but now where the VO, where I'm doing my setups, making my notifications, I got to rely on that VO's information to tell me, hey, you have power lines down the block over here. You have, you know, some obstacles over this way. It might be better if you're over here. Maybe we'll set up over there. And I got to rely on that information, because if I stop now what I'm doing to go take that lap, that's, you know, time wasted where that drone is in the ground, not in the air where it needs to be.
Awesome. Well, I think what you guys are doing and what the education that you are giving other departments right now is extremely important and imperative. And it looks like we'll be working together in the short term to do an online class to really help departments kind of get going and whatnot. So is there anything that you want to say about that? What's your goal? Why did you want to do that?
I want to do that because I want departments to err on the side of safety. A lot of times that's one of the main things that are overlooked, is just safety in general, whether it's from a, you know, an operator's perspective or just the pilot himself or herself. Firefighting and public safety, we operate 24/7 every day. And sometimes they're going to be a little tired, you're going to be exhausted, and you have to realize that it's not always about doing what we do, it's doing what we do and doing it safely. So if you were able to put, you know, an operation together and every time come back with the same results, if you're not doing it safe, eventually that's not gonna happen. And if you have that on a public safety side, that could really hurt the community as a whole.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think one of the biggest issues actually are departments spending money on equipment that they don't necessarily use. And then some departments aren't funded very well, so they may only have a $20,000 budget. They spend that whole budget, don't really get trained or anything. And then, you know, when the department looks back and says, what's the efficiency of this program? Are we really using this money? And it's like, well, you know, we had a few crashes, we did this, we did that, and this really isn't the right equipment for us. You know, I'm worried that that problem is going to continue and departments won't get money in the future to continue their drone programs because it wasn't started off from the right foot. So personally, I have a lot of passion about this because I want departments to have the right equipment to essentially lower their learning curve and not deal with any BS. There's a lot of BS in this industry, even from, let's say, the FAA. You know, it was always, let's be super safe. But sometimes, when you don't know drone operations inside and out, the veil of safety can actually make operations less safe, i.e. the tether, right? This is something that's it's a very big issue and hasn't really been talked about a lot. So I'm greatly appreciative, and I'm sure the community as a whole is greatly appreciative of what you guys are doing and what you're out here and educating people as a whole. So I just want to say from our community and from myself, like, thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Is there anything else you want to mention while we're on the show? Anything that you think is important that maybe a department might want
to
know?
Departments have to look at the bigger picture of when they purchase a drone. It doesn't stop there with their funding. There's training involved. There's manpower involved. Just because they get a grant to purchase a drone doesn't mean that it stops there.
Gotcha.
There's a lot more entailed. There's the public image, the public safety factor that's involved.
Records.
Record keeping.
Data.
You know, we report to the FAA with everything, and there's so many nuances that are factored into it, besides the fact that I purchased a drone, I know how to fly it, and I'm flying it in front of a building that's on fire. It goes far beyond that.
Yeah, really, you could go down the rabbit hole on that one.
Yeah,
all day
yeah.
long, especially with when it comes to grants too, because eventually this equipment gets outdated and
quickly.
Very quickly,
and that's an issue you run in with large departments, is that there's a red tape issue. That by the time there's approval, you're already at Gen 2 or Generation 3. And now you're back to square one on how your purchasing works.
Yeah. I think that was also a big issue with the Matrice series, because it had four generations, and then we got the V2, and some things didn't work from one generation to another. And I'm honestly really excited the fact that you're using smaller, more portable drones, because even when we worked with Anaheim County, and when we worked with Rancho Cucamonga, you know, they were all like, you know, the big issue with these drones is that we can't get the cases in all of our fire trucks. We can't get the cases in our even some of our SUVs. It's got to be compact and portable. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and saying, look, this is the drone that works for us. This is the drone that's saving lives. And it's not the big, awesome, expensive looking one. No, no, no. It's the little red one over there, right? It's like the little engine that could, you know?
I see no need why a department can't work off of off-the-shelf products. There's no need for an in-house build. There's no need to go and have somebody do a build from you out from an outside company. It's easy for repair. It's easy for purchase. And it's an easier learning curve.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I couldn't agree more with that, because if we needed a pair of propellers, we could go to Best Buy and get a pair of propellers.
So there's an ecosystem and an infrastructure as well, instead of just going to one enterprise dealer. Because it seems like, all right, John McBride, I'm calling you out, but it seems like John McBride is one of the very few people that knows these systems inside and out. I mean, I've been working with DJI for just as long as he has, and yet I still feel like I don't know half about those enterprise drones, the 210s and the 200s. And it's also, again, you know, I've been pushing for this for a long time because I think it's a better solution. But again, you bring up great points. The amortization, how long does it take to get money, spend it, and then use it? That's a huge problem, you know? Departments that we've seen on average take between 16 and 18 months from, hey, we wanna buy this, to pull the trigger. Yeah. So, well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. Greatly appreciate it. And for everyone watching at home, don't forget to subscribe. If you have a question, go to askdroneu.com. But that's going to do it for us today, as we are out here with FDNY at Fort Totten. Thanks again for listening. This is another awesome episode of Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.